Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics.
Welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Fred Schenkelberg.
And this is Carl Carlson.
Hey, Carl. You know, we've been talking about some of the behind-the-scenes updates and stuff that affects a bunch of your articles, because that's where I started. And one of the comments you made was, and I wasn't surprised because I knew this was happening, is that your thinking and teaching about FMEA has evolved over time. And I think RPN to alternate ways or better ways to set priorities rather than just scales and scores and simple mathematics. But when I looked at how blogging works, is your oldest articles, the ones that talk about severity and detection and stuff like that, are the most visited. It's like somebody is, it's not a book, it's not front to back, it's not a newspaper column, it's not old versus new. All of our articles on Ascendo are available immediately. And it depends on what specific questions somebody asked, their search history, and how well does that stack up against Google or AI thinking that your article will answer their question or meet their query. And older articles get more preference, I've learned recently, because they're vetted. They have lots of history and stuff like that. So it was like, just because we evolve doesn't mean that our audience is finding them. Yet it is evolving. So it was kind of a revelation. But it brings out the larger topic is, well, wait a second. Most reliability stuff doesn't move a whole lot. You know, the Arrhenius equation is still the Arrhenius equation. The rate of corrosion for aluminum is still the rate of corrosion for aluminum, and on and on and on. And there's some new things every now and then, new materials and stuff, but the ability to create a reliability plan, which we wrote about, I don't think that is different than what we've been doing for 20 years. I think we expressed it better than we ever had before. But you know what I mean? Setting up an accelerated life test, it really hasn't changed a whole lot. Derating really hasn't changed a whole lot. And so what do you get? Where are you? Quit changing FMEA, Carl. It's all your fault. Leave it alone.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know, what is interesting, Fred, is that what doesn't change are the fundamentals.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I think some of those early articles, because my first series in the Inside FMEA series, my first sub-series was on fundamentals. Mm-hmm. Just going through the different aspects of FME. What is a function? What is a failure mode? What is an effect? And the fundamentals stay the same year after year after year. What changes is the application. The application evolves, particularly because we're talking about the approach. And I'll explain that a little bit.
Okay.
In a product development process in the real world, not in academia, I'm talking about in the world where, not that academia isn't real, I just mean in the world where you're developing products and manufacturing products and you have limited resources. You have timetables and timing. Mm-hmm. Fast to market is an issue. And all that means you have to hone the methods that you use to get the maximum value with the resources that you have in the time that you have. That's what changes, because if you take your example you brought up, which is one of many examples in FMEA of RPN, that's part of prioritizing risk. Well, prioritizing risk in an FMEA is a fundamental. How you go about it can evolve. And in this case on RPN, it's evolved by experience that we had one way of doing it, which was a risk priority number, thinking that one number could represent the risk. And we've evolved, given the honing of the approach in the real world of developing products, we've evolved that there are better ways to assess risk You still have severity occurrence detection, but how do you combine them into a risk assessment? And now we have things like action priority or risk priority matrix and things that are better than RPN and fix the flaws. So that's an evolution of approach. It's not an evolution of the fundamental.
Okay.
And I part of this, Fred, is this conversation that you and I have been having have distilled my thinking on the subject, which is fundamentals are critical and they are rock solid. They're like principles. And I'm not seeing them changing, but the approach to applying those fundamentals in a product development process where you have limited resources and time, changing management, and you name it, that approach can evolve. And so I've been aware of that. And so when I did my articles, and I've got, I don't know, 140 or whatever the articles are now, I did them from the point of view of that moment in time, not thinking about the evolution of the content of the article.
Well, yeah, what catches my attention though is that you say, you know, RPN, is there a better way, is might not be the exact title, but it was something like that, is that it hints to that you're evolving it. Now, some of it I know is from experience. You were just outlining that. But how much of that evolution is the tools that we have available, like AI systems? And I know we've talked about AI and FMEA in the past. Some of the forces at play in the wild west of the world, or the wild nature of the internet, is, you know, I mean, even ReliSoft had this at one point. They had a FMEA tool that you could pre-populate just about everything. And you're like, okay, well, that's not terribly useful based on the principles. Yet it's an evolving force. And I remember when Post-its were really popular, or still are, and using them to do the FMEA instead of, and I hated it. The first time somebody brought a laptop and projected it onto a very small screen at the far end of the conference room, I immediately knew that wasn't helpful.
Yeah.
While they're sitting there writing what somebody, could you say that again? And it just completely destroyed the flow of the discussion and of the brainstorming and everything else. And I'm like, so there's just the tools we use, whether it's spreadsheets or Post-its or whiteboards or AI generated or pre-filled, or there's a lot happening in the last 10, 15 years that has changed how we enter the room, basically, to do FMEAs.
Well, I completely agree. On an FMEA, I want to say that as a subject, the body of knowledge of FMEA is a little different than some of the other reliability tools. And my career is reliability, so I'm speaking from the experience of implementing reliability programs, and FMEA is one method in the program. And I know there's a difference there because FMEA is often done by teams, it should be, and interactive teams, which is a little different than going off and doing an analysis a specific method that doesn't need a team. Mm-hmm. And the how you interact with a team can evolve because we have, I've mentioned this before we hit the record button, Fred, my first FMEAs I did in word processing back in the 1980s. Mm-hmm. And I would hand write the portion of the FMEA, and it would go to some secretary would input it into the word processor, would come back, they print it back out in time for the next meeting, which is usually not a full team. And then look how that's evolved into Excel, and then into relational database, and now into AI.
Yeah. See, I've skipped all the AI and all the other spreadsheets and everything else. Well, not spreadsheets. I shouldn't say that. They're pretty handy. But I would do the FMEA on paper, on the walls, mm-hmm. or if they had lots and lots of whiteboards or chalkboards, I actually used the chalkboard a couple of times, write it up on the chalkboard. So everything's visible to the entire team the whole time. Because
perfect.
Right. And then probably learned that from you. And and instead of handwriting it all down or typing it in at the end of the session, I would take pictures of it. And then at my leisure, the coffee shop later or on the plane home, type it all out. But it was, the principle is make it a dynamic team event, not a servant to the software.
Well, that's the point, Fred, is you want, you do not want a fill out the form exercise. You want a team interaction, deep thinking, innovative, creative exercise. Mm-hmm. And the fill out the form, the problem with the tool, like Excel or relational database or whatever, is people then get into the tool becomes the thing. And whereas it's the thinking that's the thing, it's the team contemplating, and you're using very nicely a chalkboard as a way to undervalue consciously the tool. By that, I mean the spreadsheet, so to speak,
right,
and value the interaction with people. And that's a really good thing because that's what you want. The problem is when you get a big company, or a lot of companies, is they have a lot of FMEAs. And so very often an FMEA is a modification to an earlier one. Or, okay, we've got a new portion of the widget, so you don't need to start over. And so a relational database can be of value. But the whoever's leading that has to be totally driven by principles rather than forms. And so that's the key. So part of that evolution, like you mentioned a few minutes ago, the tools have evolved, but the principles haven't evolved.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm glad for that. I'm very glad for that. And we need to keep those points separated. Linkage is another point. You can link a design FMEA to a process FMEA. And that's important. Certain very key elements in there. You can link a design FMEA to maintenance or RCM, and that's important. So I think technology can help us. The problem is when technology becomes the thing, and you lose that human interaction, which is so the evolving nature of FMEA is how do we use the new technology to implement the principles that we know rock solid. And that's going to be a challenge going forward.
Yeah, it's a challenge. And I it's probably a subject for a whole bunch of other podcasts and articles and so on. But the changes I've seen in the software packages and now with AI type stuff and so on is that it's eroding people's thought that that's what they need to go do. And it has, it's not any different than the first standards that came out in the 60s that says, well, here's the template, you know, nicely drawn on an 8.5 by 11 sheet of paper, and you can go fill it in. And you have to have micro print in some of those boxes to get, you know, here's the four possible causes, and here's the six different mitigation techniques we're using and so on. And having a spreadsheet, you could scale those boxes and do all kinds of stuff. So I thought that was nice, but it's solving a problem from the printed page to a computer page to you're still in the technique, you're still on the form. And it's an aid. And I think the original concept of having the various columns organized, they are and so on, was an aid, intended to be an aid to the thinking. Yet, as you know, Mill Handbook 217 became the model for predicting the reliability of your system when it couldn't be further from the truth. And it even says in the document saying not to be used to predict actual expected results. It's not its purpose. Yet those things get lost when it's a time saver or perceived as a time saver or perceived as a thinking saver. If I don't have to think about it, it's easier. Let's do that. And I don't think that has changed over time.
No, it
hasn't. We have new tools.
It totally hasn't. You've kept using the same word, think. And that is really the key, that's the principle involved, is thinking, and the tool has to support that. But too many people use the tool instead of their own thinking. I have a story to tell, and part of this you've heard, but some of it you haven't. Years ago, back when I was in automotive, we had some very expensive recalls, and one of them was on a secondary hood latch, which if it fails, then you have the possibility of the hood flying up while you're driving, for example, which mm-hmm. you don't want to do. So it's a critical failure, and it's governed by regulations. And so you have recalls, expensive recalls, if you have a problem with a secondary hood latch. Mm-hmm. 1 year we had a recall, and we fixed it. And then on another program, another car program, we had the same problem and another recall. At that point, the management said, why don't we use FMEA to document these known problems and make sure they don't happen on future car programs? That was a good thing. Known problems.
Right. But if the FMEA will get to be 6,000 lines long and nobody's going to read it.
Yeah. Well, you're heading,
I've been there,
right?
I've done that.
Yeah, that's going to be part two of the story. So I got religion in my group. I was managing a group of reliability engineers and FMEA and stuff like that. I said, okay, every new FMEA, you're going to have to interrogate the warranty database and find out the problems regarding the item you're FMEAing and make sure those are part of your analysis. Mm-hmm. So the first one I did was on window regulators. And I said, okay, give me a printout. The warranty department sent me a printout. It was about 6 inches tall, a small print of on the old, whatever you call those printers that had the little holes in the edges.
Oh, yeah. I know what you mean.
It was just huge amounts of data over the years. And a lot of it, onesie, twosie, whatever, you know. Impossible to incorporate all of that into an FMEA. It was just raw data. Right. Some of it was meaningless. Some of it was important. In the middle of it was probably some real gems. So what I'm getting at is I learned a lesson that the vital few is essential. The trivial many is not. How do you navigate that? It's not easy, but you have to, because otherwise your FMEA is going to be a giant database, 99% of which is 0.9, has very little value, and then you waste a lot of time.
Well, that's where the art comes into facilitating an FMEA is, I mean, it can be just a really small problem with that secondary latch that in the moment, in the design team, in the effort, without any prior history, you know, that this design would cause a problem, it would be very easy to overlook.
Yeah.
Right. And yet a facilitator says, you know, if you start with, here's the unwanted things we want to happen. It doesn't hold. It under hits a pothole, flies open kind of thing. What could cause that to happen? But it has to be open enough to uncover that unknown piece going, well, the withhold of this latch doesn't support X number of foot pounds, whatever. And that would happen under a pothole experience or something like that, or certain vibration scenarios or whatever. But if the idea is, I think, goes back to the principles, is that it's just checking off the box and filling in what you already know, or what you already know walking into the room. Nobody's thinking. You're just regurgitating. Whereas, and it could be from AI today, and it's equally useful. The principal part is that, and my thought was, is that at the end of the day, we're using this method to help support decisions. What are the things we need to go pay attention to? And that gets difficult when you have a Pareto chart of all your field history. And if you only solve the top two things, you're probably missing the vital few that you really could fix very inexpensively and won't become the top of the list next year because they were masked by their current one.
It's a great point. How you, like you use the word art, which is an interesting word in our
engineering field.
Engineering world, yes. But it is so important that you don't miss important things. I'll put it down as a principle. Don't miss critical stuff.
Which becomes an art.
Yeah, it becomes an art. And there's an algorithm in there that we use. Here's what I use. And I'd love to figure out if this can be, I don't see how it's going to be automated, but this is what I do. On an FMEA, I make sure I got the right team together of subject matter experts. Mm-hmm. Doesn't have to be a big team, might be four people, you know, whatever. But it's not everybody. It's not 30 people. And I use their experience. And I say, when somebody brings up, okay, a tiger can come through the door and stomp on the pen, I go, is anybody in this team concerned about that? They kind of shake their head. No, I'm not concerned about that. Okay. We're not going to put that in our FMEA. However, if one person is concerned, I'll take it up and discuss it and look what's the rationale for it and that kind of thing.
Yeah. Well, this is in that area. I mean, using a meteor destroying your device is one extreme, right? Another one where every single unit you make fails in a dangerous way, and it's not supposed to. That's the other extreme. Those are obvious. It's that gray area, right? We're down into the weeds a little bit here. And I use a similar technique. Is this something we're going to need to take action on? You know, in even just knowing the failure mechanism, you know, is like, is this a slow corrosion that will take 50 years to occur? Yes, it'll cause problems. Do we care? And that might not be something you want to document, but is it possible to go faster? If one person has a concern about it, then there's a technique or a method called, drawing a blank, it's some Greek person's name. I'll think of the name and probably after we stop recording, but you do a survey and you ask everybody to come up, you know, rank order these things, you know, with how important is this, say, of these five things or whatever. And everybody will have their scores. And on average, most people familiar with a particular topic will have similar rankings. There will be outliers. There will be one person that puts this number one that nobody else did, and somebody else that says this number 10 nobody else did, kind of thing. In Delphi, it's called the Delphi method. And so and then the technique is then you go back to the outliers and say why and document it. And then send that extra documentation back to all 10 or all the survey participants and say, does this additional information change your rankings? And then until it becomes a consensus that this is where we're at. And it's been incredibly powerful to get rid of groupthink, to follow the leader, or somebody said that's a six, so I'm going to believe that's a six, and I don't have to think about it. I found it to be a really cool technique. It takes some skill to set it up and run it. Yet I agree with you is that if one person says, you know, a little extra corrosion on that makes that more slick and that clamp won't hold, we might not have all the information to be able to really adjudicate it at the moment. Yet the action item might be go learn more about the rate of that corrosion or how that material changes with time. And then add it back into the list and prioritize it appropriately.
But
the idea is that the end of the day, we use this method to make decisions, and the decisions are based on that prioritization. And
so let's round this up.
Yeah, and that was where I'm heading is that, and it's the same with all of our reliability methods that we use. They're used to help us make decisions and our teams make decisions. If you keep that in mind, then the principles become pretty self-evident. It doesn't really matter what tools or techniques or systems you're using. If it degrades the ability to make good decisions, don't do that.
That speaks to the evolving nature of FMEA, which was what we've been talking about. Mm-hmm. Just don't lose sight of the principles that would need to support the making of decisions, the principles of what are the fundamentals of FMEA. Those are rock solid and have to be in front of you all the time. The evolving nature with technology and trials and errors and lessons learned, the approach can evolve, but we can't undermine the fundamentals and the principles.
Yep.
Let's open this up to our listeners. If you have your thoughts, this is a wide open subject. We're going to have part two to this, part three, part four. So let's hear feedback from people. What's the evolving nature of FMEA in your applications? How do you maintain the integrity of the FMEA with the rapidly evolving technology that you're using? I'd love to hear from you.
And you can do that over at ascendoreliability.com/go/SOR. And you can find a couple of ways to get in touch with us. Carl and I and the other hosts are available through LinkedIn and our about pages on the site. So plenty of ways for you to get in touch, and we'd love to hear from you. And interesting topic, Carl. Some things stay the same and other things don't.
Exactly. It evolves.
It evolves. That's the right word for it. All right. Yeah. Thanks so much, Carl. We'll talk to you again soon.
Talk to you soon, Fred.
Cheers.
Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation. If you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show, please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.